All right, here in verse 14, we title this verse, Regarding Those with Spiritual Problems and Needs. So he had exhortation specifically directed towards church leaders and the responsibilities of the membership otherwise. And now we have exhortation, if you will, the church as a whole, regarding those with spiritual problems and needs. And we urge you, brothers, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with all men. Doesn't look too much, does he? Just kidding. And we urge you, and is conjunction de, de, now. And our verb to urge here is our verb we've seen often in this epistle, parakaleo, P-A-R-A-K-A-L-E-O. Generally translated exhorting, maybe comforting, depending on the context. Literally means to call alongside. Hence, urging, we exhort, you all, reference the Thessalonians pronoun suit. Again, he addresses them as brothers, just as he did in verse 12. Our vocative case of address, masculine plural, Adelphos, A-D-E-L-P-H-O-S. Admonish the unruly. And we have the imperatives set out for us in the exhortation. Admonish is the imperative present active of our verb nouthetheo, N-O-U-T-H-E-T-E-O, means give direction, admonish. They translated it that way in this verse, as they should have back in verse 12, where it was translated give you instruction. Warn is another nuance attached to it. The unruly. The unruly is the pronominal adjective with the definite article, accusative masculine plural of ho, atoktos, A-T-A-K-T-O-S. Literally, this adjective is used of soldiers disobeying orders. They are not in battle order, if you will, or they are out of formation. And the military doesn't like that. And they will jump hard when people step out of line, see. So it's a military term of disobeying orders. Translated unruly, disobedient, undisciplined. It's a hot box in regards to its form only used here, even though it has cognate words used elsewhere, as we'll see in our notes. Admonish the unruly. Encourage the faint-hearted. A present deponent imperative here, encourage, is our compound verb para mutheomai. P-A-R-A M-U-T-H E-O M-A-I. Literally, it means to speak alongside in a friendly manner. Whereas parakaleo is to call alongside, paramutheomai means to speak alongside in a friendly manner. Translated, encourage, comfort, strengthen, advise. We saw it back in chapter 2, verse 11. Just as you know how we were exhorting and encouraging and imploring each one of you as a father would his own children. Encourage here, the objects of encouragement is called the faint-hearted. The faint-hearted is again another adjective used pronominally with the definite article accusative masculine plural of ho, ole, Gupsikos, O-L-I-G-O-P-S-C-H-O-S, P-S-U, excuse me, C-H-O-S, Olegupsikos, the Pasuke, Pasukos. Oleg the Pasukos.
There we go.
Greek did not fit good with Midwestern tongues. this word means one who feels his resources are too small for a given situation. And the literal transliteration would be small or little souled. That would be the despondent, the faint-hearted, or broken spirit. Pasukos, soul, little. Then our third here, help the weak. Help is our imperative. Middle voice here on Teco, A-N-T-E-C-H-O, on Teco. Literally it means to cling to. Hence, help, support, be devoted to. It's used four times. The object of help here is referred to as the weak. Again, our third adjective, used pronominally with the definite article, genitive, masculine, plural, ho, osthenes, A-S-T-H-E-N-E-S. Osthenes means the weak, feeble, spiritually weak, be physical or spiritual. It's used 26 times. And then our final admonition, be patient with all men. Present active imperative for patience is our verb makro thumeo, makrothuneo. To be patient, forbearing, using appropriate restraint. It's used 10 times. With all men or towards all men, you have the preposition pros, P-R-O-S, follow with your adjective, accusative masculine plural, all, A-L-L. Excuse me. That's the English, in case you didn't know how to spell all. Pos, P-A-S. Masculine, all men. And we urge you, exhort, you brothers, admonish the unruly, encourage the small soul, help the weak, and be patient with all men. Alright, the now is verse 14. 1. Paul continues his exhortation to this local church, and we urge you, brothers. 2. The verb urge here is once again the Greek verb parakaleo, meaning to exhort or call alongside. We see its previous uses there. We've already seen it used in 3, 2, and 7. Chapter 3, verse 2, for Timothy, fellow worker of the gospel of Christ, to strengthen and encourage you. There is translated encourage, exhort you as to your faith. Verse 7, for this reason, brothers, in all our discomfort, distress, affliction, we were comforted about you through your faith. We were exhorted through their faith, our term. We saw 4:1, there translated exhort. Finally, then, brothers, we request and exhort you in the Lord Jesus. Verse 10, chapter 4, for indeed you do practice it toward all brothers who are in all Macedonia, but we urge you, brothers, that's our verb, exhort you, brothers, to excel still more. Again, in verse 18, therefore, exhort one another with these words, translated comfort, which would have the connotation for under the principle of death. And then 5, we saw in verse 11, ending that section, therefore, exhort one another and build up one another, just as you also are doing. So it's our common exhorting verb, parakaleo, used once again here in verse 14. So 3, Paul's choice of term here is designed to address the whole church, both laymen and leaders alike, with respect to application towards others with various weaknesses. For the exhortation here is as if Teen Paul were present and what they would expect from the church in assisting them in this vein. We, Teen Paul, exhort you. And the words would be just as, and it should have the strength as if they were there personally. And this is what they would expect in application alongside themselves, to call them to this level. See, to call alongside looks to encourage someone to step up to the standards and level of the person exhorting, the standards that they set forth, that they themselves assumingly are following. So the exhortation again, point four, is as if Teen Paul were present and what they would expect from the church in assisting them in this vein. These things obviously would be understandable of responsibility in regards to the pastors, the shepherds, that Paul is exhorting the entire church. So five, the second use of brothers here, adelphos in the Greek, which uses it immediately before in verse 12, recognizes that Paul is now addressing a second group of exhortations, not two groups of people within the church. He uses the term brothers to set apart two separate exhortations, not addressing two groups of brothers in that regard. So six, the term here recognizes a selfless unity between positive believers in a local church, no matter rank and file, to see to the spiritual and other well benefit for all concerned. He's already brought out the importance of that, doctrinally speaking, back in verse 11, regarding the doctrine of the rapture, resurrection, the things centering on that, and for the church to take that doctrine and to encourage or exhort one another. A reciprocating action between believers with one another and to build up one another for the edification of the church in and of itself and for individual believers that make up the church. And it is a practice that this church was obviously already engaged in, as he so attests to, finishing verse 11, just as you also are doing. So again, he is approaching it from this vantage of responsibility, of a unity, a harmony between believers, and responsibility towards one another. Again, that we're in the boat together. We all have the same goal in mind. We all have the same doctrine that we're trying to apply, albeit in our own given individual situations. And to be an encouragement, to be a help, and to assist as necessary in an appropriate way one another, for everyone's well-being, spiritually and otherwise. Your desire should be for those in the local church to also fulfill God's plan for their life and run their course and maximize an SG3. That's my desire for you as a pastor. That's why I'm here. That's one of the things that motivates me, is the potential of the wealth in eternity that believers can attain from my function of my office and my spiritual gift and my application to doctrine. And so it should be with one another, rather than this spirit of competitiveness or other types of adversity and conflict that arises in regards to churches. That doesn't mean that these conflicts are not real and they don't happen. But you had the proper attitude that you are to maintain otherwise. So 17, Teen Paul's expectation here conforms to his message of a united front underwriting this epistle. Again, one of the things that jumped out to me in the beginning of the epistle was that Paul included the entire evangelistic team in recognition and address in his opening remarks to the church, Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy. And it has a direct purpose, especially within the scenario of this local church, as they are surrounded with other religious types, Jews in particular, who were taking issue with Paul and taking issue with them, denoting an attack in regards to the faith that has been taught, and a discord that arises from that, trying to create conflict within the church. And Paul says, we don't operate that way. We have a united front because we are all united under positive volition and Bible doctrine via God the Holy Spirit. See, that's your unity. And it's all for the good. It doesn't make any difference whether you're an apostle, whether you're a prophet under the authority of the apostle, or you're a pastor teacher under the authority of both the apostle and the prophet. They all, there is no competition between them. See, it's for the benefit of the local church. So one of the things that's being brought out here, it is a reminder of the unity that is to be part of an adjusted local church, as a Thessalonian church is set forth to be a model church. See, and this unity that one should follow as set by example by Team Paul. And we brought that out on our notes. All right. Now, 8. While the Thessalonian church is accepted as a model church, now with that said, see, verses 14 and 15 make it clear that its members were not perfect. The legalistic idea of what it means to be acceptable before God, to be positive. And in many people's minds, it's this attitude of perfection. As I said once, and I'll say it again, and many more times, if you want perfect, see God. He's the only perfect entity that I know of, in addition to, obviously, in reference to His Son, Jesus Christ. Man is not perfect. There is no man, no, even the greatest spiritual individual, of one attaining to one, such as John the Baptist, whom Christ Himself said there is no one greater than John. Was not perfect. That's because we all have an SCA. We all have weakness of the flesh. And we have our problems. Personally and otherwise. And obviously, while you have those problems, it does not in and of itself disqualify you from serving God and fulfilling His plan for your life. That's why you have rebound. That's why you have Bible doctrine and Bible class. So that when you do get out of sorts, you do get out of line, you can confess it before God, and you can maintain, obviously, your integrity in regards to pursuing what God's will is for you in the matter, and seek to make the right application otherwise. Let's take our break.